Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. This is Julia Cannon, and well, we're recording this show, so we're saying it's, let's see, what is tonight? It's May, it will be May 26th when this airs. This, you know me in time. Oh, this is always so funny. You know what? It's these energies that come in, and my guest will understand that. She totally understands that. I'm getting frequencies coming off of you right now. This is so cool. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh my goodness. See, they're doing stuff to me to make you feel better, to make you feel more comfortable, Donna.
So, that's great.
This is what they do all the time. So don't worry about it. This is how it works. Okay, May 26th, which is when the show will air, 2017. My name is Julia. See, I have, a few announcements. We have so many things coming up. My gosh, I can't believe how fast what's happening and everything. But like next week, the beginning of June, it's like everything starts for me and we don't stop until the first day of summer. So there we go. We start with our QHHT classes actually start on the first day of June. So if you're interested in that, we have our level one class starting on June 1st. So it's our only live class that we have this year, and it's right over here in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And we have it structured right around our transformation conference, just in case you might want to attend both. That's, you know, it's a lot of fun. These classes are, well, ask anyone that's been to one. They are such high energy and just, oh my goodness. You just have to go to believe them. And plus being in Eureka Springs is just a whole other, that raises it to another level because of the crystals and everything that activate what's going on. Then on the 7th of June, we are having a QHHT practitioner reunion. So if you are a practitioner and you'd like to attend, even if you are not a practitioner and you'd like to attend, we open it to everyone. So just come on and you get to meet practitioners and see what, just enjoy what's going on and just get to meet everybody. We're also streaming that event. So there's, you can see more about that on QHHTofficial.com. Also the classes, about the classes as well. And then, let's see, right after that, that's on the 7th, then on the 9th through the 11th is our transformation conference. And there again, that is just something not to be missed because these conferences are so fantastic. You know, we have our UFO conference, and then this is our transformation conference. And I know some people are like, well, that name doesn't really tell me what it's about. Well, it kind of does because transformation, that says it all. We went through a lot of stuff when we were trying to name it over the years, you know, trying to tell people more descriptive what it's about or what it is. And we went through, okay, paranormal, awakening, things like that. But we've always come back to just transformation conference, because when you attend, you transform. You always leave different than you came. You will transform. So you are fed. You are fed whatever it is you need. The energies are so high and so wonderful there at these conferences that you get what you need from the speakers, the attendees, the vendors. I mean, everybody there is so, so wonderful. So you get whatever it is you are needing will be there for you. And it is just the most magnificent function. You know, you can be it. So if you're looking for something, it's probably there. Anyway, and then we'll have some more classes after the conference. We have workshops also from given by some of the speakers after the conference. So we have so many things going on. So check out our websites. That would be the transformation-conference.com. And that'll tell you all about the speakers and the workshops and things like that and the tickets. We'll talk more about this at the end. And then you can go to the QHHTofficial.com or DoloresCannon.com to get about schedules there about those classes. And again, like I said, we'll talk more about all of that at the end. Okay. And my special guest tonight is one of our speakers, and I'm so excited to have you on. Because this is something that I think people really, 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 really need. This is happening. This happens more than people will admit. And I'm so excited that people like my guest tonight are coming forward and telling their stories. So first of all, I want to welcome my guest. It's Donna Lynn. Welcome aboard. And then we'll kind of go into a little bit about your story. So, because I'm going to keep him in suspense for a little bit here. So welcome, Donna.
Thank you, Julia. I'm very excited to be talking to you.
Oh, and I'm so happy that you're on. And like I said, and thank you so much for being here and for, well, coming out. Really, really, that's what it is.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I know that's scary. That's, mm-hmm. What I'm going to ask you to do is, cause what I like people to do is to share their journey. I always say, well, you know, how did you get into this stuff, you know, into this world of this wacky world that we're in, you know, because you didn't start here. Usually people are, a lot of people have regular jobs, or they were engineers, or they were accountants, or they were this. And then all of a sudden, something happened one day and it just turned their world upside down, and here they are. And well, and that kind of is your story. I mean, but it's like your life story. So
yeah, I pretty much lived a double life since I was about 4 years old, I think.
Yeah. If you want to, because I know that's also what you're going to be talking about, so I don't want you to give your whole talk, but mm-hmm. So if you kind of briefly share some of the things that, you know, that happened so that people can understand, what, first of all, what we're talking about, because we've actually said nothing so far, and then second, you know, your journey. You know, kind of some of the stuff that you know, where you've come from and what's happened.
Okay. It started, well, I remember having severely bad dreams from about age 6. And my mom said I was 4 when I started having what the doctors called night terrors, where I wake up absolutely screaming in terror and not even aware of where I am or who I am or mm-hmm. my mom's voice or anything, just totally in another reality pretty much. And it would come and go, you know, sometimes in cycles. I would have 3 of these horrible nightmares in a row in a week, and then it would go for a few months with nothing, and then they'd start up again. And, you know, my mom took me to a few doctors, and they said it was some kind of trauma, but I didn't really have any trauma. I had a pretty normal childhood and nothing unusual. And my mom would just tell me to kind of sweep it under the rug, don't talk about it, don't tell anybody. And it left me with the feeling that there was something really wrong with me, or something that I had to keep secret and keep apart from everybody else. So I went on to be a regular kid, you know, did well in school and everything and had friends and had a life. But then I had these nighttime experiences where I had these journeys and I saw these creatures, and they took me on ships to other planets and things. And I never really told anybody about it ever. And it was mostly fear. All throughout my childhood, it was mostly fear. I remember waking up to these giant faces and giant black shiny eyes staring at mine. And when I was able to scream, I would start screaming and kicking, and that would usually make them disappear. And then I'd jump out of my bed and like tear down the hall and beg my parents to sleep on their floor for the rest of the night because I was too scared to go back into my room. And as a teenager, my dad would say, there's something kind of wrong with a teenage girl that wants to sleep with her parents. But it was just, it was terrifying. And I didn't know how to get away from it.
Yeah. And so as you recall, it was dreams.
Right. That's what I called them for the longest time. And it wasn't until probably my 20s, after I was married and had my own home and, you know, had more independence, that I started realizing there was more to it than just dreams. I would dream that they would be holding me by my arms, like guiding me around or something. And when I woke up, I'd have bruises on my upper arms, right where they were holding me. Or I'd wake up with nosebleeds a lot after I dreamed that they were poking around on my face or something. Or I'd wake up with a really severe headache after I dreamed that they were doing something with my head or my eyes. And it made me think there was maybe more to it. And I started writing journals where I'd keep journals by the bed. And when I wake up, I would just jot down feelings, thoughts, sketches before it disappeared, you know, while I could still think of it. And after a few years, I started looking back through the journals and I saw that a lot of times I was predicting things that were going to happen. I would write about something about my daughter, and that was before I ever had a baby. And then I had a baby and it was a girl, and just things like that, that started to show me there was more to it than just a dream.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then you're in your 20s at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So let's just keep carrying it forward. So like a journey. Okay. So then what happened?
Well, I guess around my 20s is when I decided I needed to look into it. And I started taking classes about meditation, and I started reading books about dreams and Edgar Cayce and Nostradamus. And yeah, I kind of got into that. And I was reading things that agreed with things that I kind of knew deep down inside, but no one had ever talked to me about. And, you know, I'd attend the meditation classes. I learned to work with crystals, and all of this just increased it to where I learned that these beings were real and they were trying to talk to me. I had just reacted with terror and screaming and kicking for so many years, but I somehow got myself calmed down. I think with meditation helped a lot, how to get myself into a better frame of mind, that when I saw these faces, I actually got myself under control enough that I let them take me places. And I would remember them and write them down in the journals. And then it's when I started realizing I've got a whole thing going on here with these beings. They know who I am. They remembered who I was from one time to the next and actually made little jokes sometimes, or, you know, little things to try to make me more at ease, not so terrified. And
yeah, that was the thing I found really interesting, was you said that they were trying to find ways to not be so scary.
Yes. Yes. They realized that when you're sound asleep in your nice, warm, cozy bed, and you sense a presence and you open your eyes and there's this big face with these big, black, shiny eyes staring at you, that's not good. Humans don't like that.
No, they don't.
They learned that if they kind of did a buzzing in my ear or kind of called my voice, like when you've had surgery, anesthesia, and you're waking up and the nurse is calling your name, like, Donna, Donna, from a distance, they learned to do that to kind of wake me up that way, to ease me into it. And then they started doing different faces. Like one time they had a caveman face, and one time they had like a bird face. I think they were trying different ways to approach me.
Okay. So the eyes looking at you, just waking up, looking at you in the eyes at night, was just a way to wake you up.
Yes. And it's kind of their meet and greet, you know, how dogs sniff, humans shake hands, or different creatures bow or exchange gifts or whatever. That's kind of what aliens do to actually get to know one another, because with that really deep eye staring, they can kind of scan your mind and kind of read your thoughts and your fears and your dreams and your hopes. It's a really intense way to get to know us, and that makes us extremely uncomfortable. But that's kind of what aliens do when they meet each other. They do that eye stare thing, and that way they know each other. And so for them, it was just kind of hi, how are you? We want to know you. But it was a little too intense for humans.
And that's what I love. That's actually what I love about your book is, I mean, I realize, you know, your journey, that, and that's what the whole thing is called, From Fear to Love, is because you do come, you know, it is fearful. And that's what I want people to understand is, I mean, we can, you know, we can continue on this as far as like, but that's where you've actually already said it. You know, you it was fearful, but then you started understanding what they were doing. They actually were communicating that to you.
Right.
Really. And that got, once you started understanding that, then, like you said, that you found out they had a sense of humor. They were actually cracking jokes. I mean, they were doing these things. I mean, then you go, oh my gosh, you know, it's like,
yeah. Another trick that they did was they'd use my mother's voice. I'd be lying in bed and I thought I heard my mother calling me. And this was after I was an adult living on my own. You know, I'd hear my mother's voice calling me from a distance. And, you know, you actually put at ease when you hear your mother calling your name. And they figured that out. And so they realized if they called me in her name and then I'd turn and there'd be this crazy looking creature with these big eyes, that's not my mother. But they were trying to find ways to calm me down and put me at ease. And just knowing that they were doing that made me stop fearing them so much.
Now, I can see how some people, now, okay, I'm going to play the devil's advocate, which I don't normally do, but I can see how some people would take that a different direction. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I was a little worried people might say, oh, that's demons or negative entities or something like that. Is that what you mean?
Well, no, not necessarily that. It'd be more like, oh, that's them playing mean tricks on you, you know, that kind of a thing. You know, it's like they're acting like they're, you know, they're trying to, you know, be nice, like they're using your mother's voice, but then they're trying to, you know, then they're scaring you, whatever, you know, I'm trying, it's like, oh, then they're getting you over here or something. Because people do that. They say that sometimes, you know, it's like, oh, then they want to get you to go do this and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, but you weren't finding them that way.
No. And I think what really kind of pushed me over the edge to realize they are good. They do have good intent. I've had migraine headaches off and on since I was 15, and they usually seem to hit me in the middle of the night, the worst. And I'd be laying awake, you know, with these horrible pounding headaches. And they would sometimes come to me for no other reason, apparently, than to help relieve my pain. You know, the one main one that looks kind of like a praying mantis. He seems to be like the doctor or the healer. And he would manifest there next to my bed and put his foreleg across my forehead. And I would just have this sense of calm and peace and relaxation flood my body, almost like getting a shot of morphine or something. And I could go back to sleep. And when I woke up, I would not be in pain. And I would think, wow, he came for no other reason than because he knew I was in pain and he was making me feel better. And I got a good night's sleep. So that helped a lot to realize that.
Did you ever get, okay, this is just coming to me. I have no idea why. Did you ever get a sense? I mean, I know we just label things migraine headaches. Did you ever get a sense as to why you had the migraine headache?
No, never did.
Okay.
Maybe that was so that they could come and take it away. And that would be kind of mean, but
no, it wouldn't be mean, but it might be. Well, I mean, you said sometimes you got headaches after they had been doing things and maybe it was to adjust something, or maybe it was that something was not acting. Maybe it wasn't working correctly. And so they came and they relieved it, or maybe it was to show you that, hey, we can do these things. We can help you or whatever, you know.
Now that you mentioned it, I did have around 2002, 2003, I had a lot of scenarios where they would come and I would actually feel them screwing like a breastplate on my chest. And they would talk to me at the same time and say my heart was connected to the Middle East. And of course, that was right after 9/11 and we were ramping up aggression with Iraq and Afghanistan. And they said that people that have problems with their heart area are resonating with Mother Earth because the Middle East is like the Mother Earth heart chakra. And so those of us that are sensitive to the earth may pick that up. And I would actually see them putting like this weird blue breastplate on my chest. And of course, when I wake up, there's nothing there, but it was like they were giving me protection. So it's possible that maybe my head is connected to another part of the earth or some part of the
earth. That, what an interesting, my, I mean, okay. And I don't know what you know about me, but I feel energy and I get all these messages and stuff, but, and people, and I, my book, okay, anyway, but I'll get vibrations when I hear truth. And my whole, my leg, my whole lower body was buzzing when you were talking about that just now. And that tells me that that is truth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, whenever I hear, whenever I get that, whenever I get any kind of buzzing, I call that, that's why I call those truth bumps.
Oh, okay.
And anybody, everybody, it, you know, the goosebumps that we get, that's what those are. That means whatever you just heard or whatever you just said is truth.
Wow.
And, yeah, and so that's why I say, you know, everybody has an ability because everybody gets goosebumps, you know. So, but anyway, but my whole, my both legs just started majorly buzzing when you were just now talking about that. So that is a really, really interesting phenomenon that, you know, because I've heard about the Middle East heart chakra thing. But so that, you know, okay, so then what we'll have to look into, what the, because the head, that would be the crown, that would be the crown chakra, right? The, or the third eye chakra, that'd be the third eye chakra.
Maybe more the third eye, because it's like at my temple, at my right temple, where I always get the pain.
So we need to find out where that is on the earth. And one of our authors is, knows a lot about the different chakras of the earth, and that's, you know, Maria Wheatley, she does, she knows a lot about that, so maybe she can tell us.
Oh, that would be great.
Maybe one of our listeners, so maybe maybe we're on to something. That'd be so cool.
I tried to equate it with earthquakes. I live in California, so I usually get onto the earthquake map and think, when I've had a really bad migraine, and think, did that relate to an earthquake? And you know, I've connected a few, like that really bad one in Japan that set off the Fukushima nuclear plant. I had a severe migraine all that day before, but it doesn't always, it doesn't always ring true with the earthquakes.
Okay. Do you, have you, but you have recorded when you've had them?
Yes.
So there's a, and to see if there's any kind of a pattern or.
Yeah. I haven't found one yet.
Okay. Maybe we can get with Maria or somebody who would know about earth patterns or something, to maybe we can just study on this. This would be fun.
Yeah, it would be very interesting.
Okay. Because that's what I want people. And now, they're saying it's not me. It's you want people to know this. Oh, thank you very much. Okay. There, it's more than just, it's not just there aliens that come and take us away and oh my, you know, it's not that, it's so much more. It's
right. They're very interested in the earth. I mean, they love humans and humanity, and they're really intrigued by our complex nature and our, how we can be so brutal and violent and vicious, but at the same time, be so loving and compassionate and gentle. They're very intrigued by that. And that's one of the reasons they come and study us and pick out individuals to study. But they love the earth more. They're more devoted to taking care of the planet and all the life on the planet. And I kind of lost my train of thought. Sorry. Oh, that was it. Before the year 2000, you know, there was a lot of speculation that there were going to be a lot of catastrophes, a lot of major issues with Y2K, and then with December 21st, 2012. And right around the end of the 1990s, they took me a lot of times on spaceships and showed me, like they took me far back, like behind the moon, and showed me the Earth with explosions or with tsunamis or wars, really terrifying things. And I would be so upset. And then when I woke up and turned on the news and realized that didn't really happen, I would be upset. But I think, and I, from what I understand, a lot of people were shown disasters about that time. And I think they were trying to jolt us awake, like shake us by the shoulders and say, take care of the earth or you're going to destroy everything. And
yeah,
I haven't had that happen as much ever since. I really thought something bad was going to happen on December 21st, 2012, and nothing did that I'm aware of. But it seems like since then that those disaster scenarios haven't been as prevalent, and they're more into just the love and caring and compassion and take care of each other messages.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a major shift of energy at that time. And
so maybe they did get through to us, to enough of us that we changed.
Enough things. Of us. Yeah. So that, well, because you do, you see people, I mean, you can see that there is a shift in, for the most part, in attitudes of people toward the earth. You know, you'll see people doing things that in media and everywhere. I mean, I'll see people, I mean, and I can't either. I can't kill things. I can't kill anything. And people that normally would have, I mean, men and stuff, I mean, they'll get right. They can't kill spiders. They can't kill these little things anymore. And they take care of the earth. I mean, it's just a whole different attitude.
It is. It really is. I think YouTube and the internet have helped a lot because they show, you know, a man saving a wolf trapped on the ice or a fisherman saving a fish that got caught or something. You know, they're showing these things and people respond real positively. So that encourages people to do that even more.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And there's just something. Yeah. It's like this. Yeah. It's like, I don't know. It's like this vibe. It's a feeling that just starts. And it could be, it probably is that, you know, it's like things like that happen. They're doing that. And then just overall feeling, it's like people are just shifting toward, they just, well, like you start seeing more conservationism, people wanting to do more, what's the word? Because all that's happened in the last where they're doing more recycling and being more conscientious of things. That's happened, really progressed in the last 10 years, definitely.
Yes.
Because you look back, and that's what you have to do. That's what I tell people when they say, oh, nothing's happened. We haven't shifted. Nothing's really gone. And I say, no, you have to look backwards and then go back there and then look forward again to really see what's happened.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen a big change in attitudes and even the children. Well, of course, the new children being born, they're just so beyond. They're so wise and they care about the earth and they want to plant gardens and pick up trash. And that's just amazing to me, too.
Yeah. Yeah. They teach us.
Yes.
Okay. So, well, tell more because there's one. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I scanned back through your book, but I read it from cover to cover before we accepted it. And I'm trying to remember which being it was. He was the one that was with you for quite a while. Was it the mantis or the cricket or the cricket one that was like your main? He was really with you and was teaching you so much.
Yeah, he's kind of a cross between a praying mantis and a mole cricket.
Okay, but so I had them both.
His name is Croaked. And he can change. Like sometimes his average size is like 7 feet tall, but every once in a while he comes to me and he's very small, like a regular cricket or even bigger or, you know, but he's the same. I can tell it's the same being. And he told me for the longest time, also when I was trying to get by the fear, I'd say, what's your name? What's your name? Because as humans, we like to categorize things and put them in a little box, and it makes us feel more in control or safe if we can name something or, you know, put a name to it. And they would tell me, all of them would say, the names are not important. The message is what's important. And then I think when they finally started realizing maybe it would help me if they gave their names, they did. Some of them did start giving their names. And he told me his name was Croat. And I could see it in my head as C-R-O-T-E. He's very specific about how to spell it. And what's funny is about a week after that, I was watching the movie K-Pax, which had just come out. And Kevin Spacey played an alien named Prot, P-R-O-T. And I remember thinking, nobody's going to believe me now. This guy copied K-Pax. But things like that happen all the time where I'll come out with something and then I'll write it down with the date and everything. And then it will come out somewhere else as something else. And then, you know, people that don't know me will think I copied them. But actually, it's just a confirmation that that really
happened. Yeah, I was just going to say that. It's just confirmation.
So I don't even know if that's his real name or if it's just another kind of joke thing that he did, but I still call him Croat.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, does it really matter? Cause it's, don't they, where's this coming from? I was just going to say, don't they go by frequency? It's frequency. That's how they know each other, isn't it?
Because I've heard, when they speak amongst themselves, they sound more like whales or dolphins. They don't talk like we do. So maybe they do use frequencies.
Okay. Now, talk a little bit more about, because I'm going to tell you, the love that this being, I mean, you were able to express him in such a beautiful way. The love came through. It actually comes through. And I was just like, oh my God, I want him. I want him to come to me. I want one just like him. You know.
Good. I think that's what he wanted me to convey, because he's made it plain that he does work with a lot of humans and he wants to work with even more humans. So hopefully by me getting the book out, other people will invite him, and you know, you have to ask because of free will, and he does want to work with a lot of people, and it's such an all-encompassing love. Like if that was a boyfriend of mine, I'd be jealous that other women wanted the relationship. But it's not like that. It's such a huge unconditional love that I really want him to interact with as many humans as possible, because it's not like a jealous, envious, greedy kind of love like humans tend to have with each other. It's just a complete, unconditional, all-encompassing love.
Well, you did a fantastic job of, or he did, or something. It is conveyed so beautifully. The love comes through. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's just like, oh my God, my heart was bursting.
Oh, that's great. That's exactly what I wanted to do. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, it was just like, oh my gosh. Well, you know, I'm ready.
The one incident that really set it for me was not too long ago, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, he showed me standing on a stage talking to people about him and about the aliens. And at that time, I was thinking, there's no way I would ever talk to people about this. I didn't even tell my husband or my daughter about this. But, you know, here I am talking about him. But he showed me a visual of me standing on a stage talking to people on a microphone. And all of a sudden, he appeared just to my right and slightly behind me, which is usually where they are, where you can't really see them, but you know they're there.
Yeah.
And I could hear the audience members kind of gasping and everything as they saw him too. Mm-hmm. And then he had me turn around and he said he wanted me to hug him in front of all these people to let them know he was safe and loving. And I didn't want to, because he looks like a big praying mantis and he's got 6 legs and they wave around and they've got little hairs and prickly things on him like a bug. And I kind of took a step back and he took a step forward and just engulfed me with his 6 legs. And that's when I felt such intensity of the love. And he said to me, the better to hug you with, my dear.
Yes, yes.
He knew. My favorite story as a child was Little Red Riding Hood. And my mom would do the voice, the better to hear you with, my dear, when the wolf pretended to be grandma. And that right there just clinched it, because he not only hugged me and I felt that love, but he knew from my early childhood, my favorite story and the experiences I had with my mom with that. And mm-hmm. it just kind of all came together. Just, wow, he's a really amazing being. And he knows me. He knows me so well.
Well, if he does appear during your talk at the conference, please hug him.
Okay. I think I have to.
Yes. Yes, you do. You better. And I don't, no, and our audience will be fine. Our audience will be complete love to him. I mean, there may be a gasp of surprise. That will be the only gasp. It won't be, you know, fear or anything like that. It'll be like, oh my gosh, yes, yes.
So, yeah. That's the fear makes it harder for them to approach too. You know, the vibration changes when it's fear-based versus love-based. And when it's love-based, it's much easier for them to approach and be visualized and heard and everything. Where when people are in fear, it's like a dark curtain that it's harder for them to approach.
And that's some stuff I like that you put in the book was, you know, if you want, you know, it's free will. Like you said, it's free will. And if you want to be visited, or if you want to have contact, because that's what I've been told. I mean, I'll communicate with them, and they've told me, you know, just that we're ready to communicate with those who are ready to communicate with us. It's like, we're ready.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay. And then after I reading your book, I'm like, I was saying, okay, I'm ready. Mm-hmm. Yeah, come on.
So, have they come to you yet?
Not yet.
Oh, gee.
Not that I know of. Not that I'm aware of. Let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've had some interesting dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that Yeah, they're stopping me there. So,
well, they do have the screen memories, which I had for the longest time. I dream I was on a round train or in a glass elevator or on a round boat. And, you know, years later, I'm reading the journals and I'm thinking, that was no round elevator. That was a spaceship. You know, so it's like your mind sometimes has a hard time accepting what you really experience. So it makes it something that you can understand better.
Actually, when you said that reminds me, I did have a dream the other night. See, that's the thing is, you know, because I don't journal, I don't write my dreams down, and I'll forget them immediately. And I've been saying I need to start writing them down. And but that reminds me, I did have a dream of being on something, and it was something, and it was like, okay, I remember in the dream thinking, this is something. It's like, you know, yeah, you know, and that's, I used to have dreams like that a lot. Okay. And then this was another one of those kinds of dreams. So it's like, okay, I was like, okay, this is something that where I'm on. It's something, but I to tell you what it was, I couldn't. No, but that happens. Yeah. And that happens to a lot of people. And that's where that's why I love that you were writing everything down.
Mm-hmm.
You have these beautiful records and the pictures. Your pictures are fantastic.
Your
drawings, you know, those are wonderful.
Oh, good.
Oh.
When I wake up and I can still see it in my mind's eye, I just grab a pencil and start drawing whatever I can, because sometimes they linger, and sometimes even to this day I can remember some things, but I don't know what I'll remember and what I won't. So I write down as much as I can.
Yeah. And that's something that's fun. Because you had stuff in there that I had never heard before.
Oh, good.
So that's why, I wanted us to publish your book. Because you had, all the different little elements, you know, the animal, you know, the alien animals and the different, it was very similar to like the Men in Black movie.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Really.
It really, I love those movies. And yeah, it makes me think, whoa, whoever wrote that must know the same beings I do, because the little pets and the different sizes and the creatures with multiple arms doing different jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it fit right in with that.
Absolutely. And then what was the one that cleaned up after everything?
Oh, I call them the brown scurries.
Yeah.
Because they move really, really fast. And actually, you can only see them out of the corner of your eye. I don't think human eyes can actually see them. Mm-hmm. Only from our peripheral vision. Mm-hmm. You think you see a little brown creature, and you turn to look, and you can't see it directly, but you can see it out of the corner of your eye. And they told me they clean up messes because they move so fast. They not only clean up, you know, if something gets spilled or a person, you know, gets so scared they might vomit or something, they clean up all that stuff. But they also have the ability to move so fast that if a human sees something on a ship or in a situation that they really shouldn't have seen, they mm-hmm. can go back and retrieve it out of our memory before it sets in our brain. So that it's kind of like you think, wait, what just happened? And you know something just happened, but you can't quite grasp it because the brown scurry might come and take it out of your brain because humans aren't ready to maybe know that just yet. So they clean up messes, you know, literally and figuratively. Everything the aliens do has multiple layers like that.
Yeah. Something, that's, you know, now some people might say, now, wait a minute. I'm going to do the two sides again. Now, see, I'm completely with you because I'm the daughter of mom. I'm Dolores' daughter, and I know what all she found, and I know what she found as their agenda and things, and it's completely in line with what everything you said there and everything. But there are some people out there that they're still over here in some of the fear, and mm-hmm. and they might think that, well, wait a minute, that's, you know, maybe that's a form of them trying to control us, you know. But I see what you're saying. It's like, wait a minute, because that's exactly what I can see what you're saying. It's like, no, you're not ready for that. You know,
right.
They know. And, well, and this is what mom always said. They said, we know your intentions better than you do. We know you better than you do. You know, and
it's
that's
true.
What. Yeah. And that's why all those years I was like, well, I think I'm ready to see you now. But it's like, you know, but you know me better than, you know, you know if I'm ready. So
that's true.
I'll kind of leave it up to you.
So. They know how much we can handle, I guess. You know,
yes.
I know if just from my experiences, I can't even imagine certain people might have committed suicide or thought about it, or maybe like, I think the reason my mom didn't want me to tell anybody, she was so afraid I might get locked away in a mental institution or something, you know? So yeah, they have to kind of walk a thin line about how much they let us know mm-hmm. and see, and how much we're able to talk about versus living in this world the way it is.
Absolutely. Well, and there may be some people in mental institutions that, you know, from this, mm-hmm. one of our other authors, Sherry Wilde, I don't know, are you familiar with her?
I've heard about her, yes.
Okay. She wanted them to declare her insane so that she could put all this away. Just like, please tell me I'm crazy, please. And, uh-huh. and they said, no, I mean, they, she went through all these tests and everything. They said, you're not, you are completely sane. And she's like, no, if you would tell me I'm crazy, that would explain everything.
Like, that makes sense.
Yeah. They're like, no, sorry.
Wow.
You're not.
You know, it has surprised me that since my book came out, I was kind of braced for a lot of ridicule or people mm-hmm. telling me I was, you know, nuts or I was making it up or whatever. But instead, I've gotten so many messages from people that say that, I've had those dreams too. Or how do you get past the fear? Or, you know, how do you get your family to believe you? And it's just, it's really been amazing that
good.
I'm really not alone. We're not alone. There are a lot of people out there that feel the same way. And they've also been keeping it inside their whole lives. And, seems like it's time to come out, you know?
It is time. And that's why I wanted, that's why I wanted you on here. That's why I wanted you to tell your story. That's why I wanted your book to be published. It's because people need to hear this. They need to know this. You know, I think this is happening to many, many more people than anyone lets on.
Yes, so, I think so too.
Did they give you an indication of why?
Not really. Well, they kind of talk about that Earth has reached like a tipping point or a crisis point, and we have to make some choices whether to create a better world or just let things keep sliding and destroying the Earth. And they have let me know that as much as they love humanity, if it comes down to a choice between saving humans and saving the Earth, they will save the Earth and let humans destroy ourselves. But they won't let us have a full-scale nuclear war. I know a lot of people are really scared about that. And that would damage way too many things, dimensions and timelines and the Earth. So they won't allow that. They might allow maybe a couple bombs back and forth, but they won't allow full-scale nuclear devastation. So I've never been really worried about a nuclear war, World War III, anything like that.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what their plan is, if they're going to take the people that are caring and loving and taking care of the Earth to a different planet or evolve with the Earth to a different dimension or how it's going to work. But it does seem like it's people have to make a choice pretty soon which way they're going to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's and have you ever read any of Dolores Cannon's books?
I started to, and then in fact my sister watches a lot of interviews, and she called me and said, there's this lady named Dolores Cannon and she's saying all the same stuff you're saying.
Okay.
So I did a little bit, but then like with Sherry Wilde too, I don't want to read or listen to too many others because I don't want it to color my own experiences.
Exactly.
I'd rather just go with my own, but I'd love to read like The Convoluted Universe and that. Maybe eventually I will.
Yeah, see, those wouldn't have an effect. Those wouldn't have anything to do with this, with your material. But yeah, what you just said, you're almost quoting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's confirmation for you.
Wow.
That's why I was just asking, had you read any of hers? And if you have, see, there's confirmation.
Wow.
I mean, that was almost a direct quote.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen Dolores Cannon's interviews about the three waves of people coming in, but I think that's about as far as I went.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, because it's how they cannot interfere. They will not allow us to, they see the warfare down here. Yeah, that, you know, that's just us playing our games. But when they saw that we might blow up the Earth, then that's when they have to step in.
Like, exactly.
Nuclear weapons. No. But the children, that's you weren't supposed to have that yet.
That's like, right. Exactly.
No. So that's when they had to step in. And they're like, oh, let's see what those kids are up to. And that's when they came in and started checking on things. And and that's when they said no, because that's what they said. The law of non-interference. See, they can't do anything unless we're about to blow up the planet.
Exactly.
Because that would have devastating effects, not only on. It doesn't just affect our world. It affects all of the other worlds, the other dimensions, all that. I mean, see, you almost, it's almost like a direct quote, what you just said.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
I know. That's what I'm like, treat it, read.
Wow. Yeah, definitely confirmation. That's something else.
Mm-hmm. So very cool. Confirmation both ways. And that's what I love. And their message. Before we get to their message, there's one thing. There's one part in there. Now, I thought was interesting because you said that I'm trying to remember how you came up to it. That I don't know if it was just some research that you did or if it was something that they gave you that some things that I think it was in the part about attracting them or something like that, that might tend to make it, was it some things that you just found, or was that something that, as far as like, your lineage and your blood type and if your parent was in the military, something like that. What was that?
Yeah, those are things I actually did find with research, mm-hmm. that more contactees have those traits in common. Rh negative blood, a parent in the military, Celtic heritage or Native American heritage,
mm-hmm.
Or that they seem to follow certain family lineages. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they probably went to my one grandmother, who was from Scotland, who was accused of being a witch because she had dreams that foretold the future. Uh-huh. So, yeah, but at this point, but then they told me, after I kind of learned all that on my own, they told me that at this point, because it's necessary to reach as many people as possible, none of that matters so much as the people, if someone's willing, you know, no matter what they're background or their karma or whatever, if they're really wanting contact, sincerely want it, and they have positive intent, that they will come to pretty much anybody at this point who they think is worthy. I hate to say worthy, but you know, someone who wants to do the love and the good intentions and the positive, not use it for manipulation or anything like that, but just do it just out of love and good intent.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember how you said, so you just call, I mean, cause I know they told me that we're ready to communicate with those who are ready to communicate with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then in yours, you just said, so you just ask them to appear, or do you just ask them to, whenever they told me that we're ready to communicate, I saw that they just showed me that it's like a beam from the heart. And it's like a heart communication.
Yes. Yes. They showed me when you ask for it or whatever, like I kind of learned this with meditation, you visualize a light coming from, you know, heaven or the central sun or God or whatever, coming in through the top of your head, your crown, and mm-hmm. then permeating your body and then coming out through your chest or heart area and expanding to all living things here on earth.
Okay.
And also to show intent by saving spiders and picking mm-hmm. up trash and being a good person and, you know, letting them know that you have the intentions of using their visits for good.
There you go.
And also ask, you know, at night, when you're going to sleep, ask, or even just if I'm home alone, I'll just say, hey guys, like today I knew I was going to be talking to you. And I said, hey guys, Croat, are you there? I could appreciate your help, you know, when I have this interview later on today. And so I don't know how often they check in on us, how they really listen to us. Right. But again, with the intention, I think when we send the intention to communicate, they get it, like a phone call or something.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's who was there right at the beginning of the show.
Ah.
I told you there was something. Yeah, because I said there was something happening right there. Mm-hmm. And that's what was meant to help you feel better.
Right, right. Because I was a little nervous. Only my second interview.
No, you're doing great. Okay, I know we have only just a couple minutes left. That's how fast it goes. See? How can people, if they want to, how can people reach you? If they have questions or if they want to find you?
Oh, I have a blog or a webpage with a blog where there's contact information, and it's just DonnaLynnDreams.com.
Okay.
And that's yeah, that's probably the best way.
Okay, super.
Ozark Mountain Publishing, of course.
Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, and then we have your book at OzarkMT.com for Ozark Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also get it, at the bookstores and Amazon, but we prefer you to get it right from us at OzarkMT.com.
Right. Oh, and I'm also, I'm on Twitter as Donna Lynn Dreams. Obviously, Donna Lynn was taken, so I decided to go with Donna Lynn Dreams for Twitter, Facebook, and my webpage.
Okay, wonderful. That's fantastic. Well, I know you are helping so many people, Donna. This is so wonderful. And thank That's you so great. Much for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for publishing my book and giving me the opportunity.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I had to. I absolutely had to. I mean, it was like this, it was a calling. It was like, it was when I had it, I knew I had to do it. We had to do it. So thank you. It was our honor to do it.
I wrote it mostly because I have a grandchild now and my niece has children and they start having night terrors. And I thought, oh my gosh, if my grandmother had written some kind of journal or notes that I could have followed, maybe it would have helped me along the way. So I started doing it just for them. And then as it came together, the aliens kept saying, you're going to submit this. And then they told me to submit it to Dolores Cannon's publisher. So you're the first one I sent it to. And it was just a shocker.
That's why I had to.
Yeah,
I had to.
They were counting on it.
Yeah, I could feel it. I mean, it was just like, you know, it was like a pull, and it was just, oh, this must be done. And when I felt croaked, are you kidding me? I couldn't let him go.
That's awesome.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, so very quickly, we're going to have to wind it up. And you will be speaking at the Transformation Conference. So everybody, please come out and meet Donna and hear her speak and hear more of her story. And if you have any questions, if you want to know, you know, hey, she can help you if you're having experiences like this, you know, come by, come on. And yeah, absolutely. Okay. And we also will be streaming the event. So if you can't come to the event, you can see it via streaming. All that information is on our website at transformation-conference.com. We also have a link to it on our ozarkmt.com site. And we have more information on Donna at both sites, and her book is on the ozarkmt.com site. So, and then on your website, and your Twitter and Facebook page, you have all your information too. So again, thank you so, so much, Donna, for being with me. This has been such a wonderful show and such a pleasure to meet you. And I can't wait to meet you in person.
Oh, me too.
Just a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably less than that now, isn't it?
Tomorrow, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, okay. I gotta let you go. I can feel the love. See, Croat's here. I can feel him.
Great.
I love you all, and have a wonderful holiday weekend, and I wish you the best, and we hope to see you at the conference or class or something coming up very soon, or sign up for everything. Hey, we have discounts if you'll sign up for several things. We have wonderful discounts on them. So come on. Let's see you there. We love you.